Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Chris Cameron, my co-host, Felicity Sidnell Reed, and our guest this week, historian Dan Buchanan, who joins us by Zoom. Each week, we visit with authors, editors, or publishers who have regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little about their lives, what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us. And we're very pleased to have Dan Buchanan with us again today. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Dan is known as the History Guy of Brighton, and he's engaged in many activities related to local and Ontario history. He's a frequent speaker to historical and social organizations, the author of three books, and the founder of Brighton History Week. In July 2015, Dan published his first book, Murder in the Family, The Dr. King Story, which tells the fascinating true story of Brighton's infamous murder case in 1859. In June of 2018, his second book, 38 Hours to Montreal, was released, telling the unique story of William Weller's record-breaking sleigh ride from Toronto to Montreal in 1840. His third book will be published in August 2020, entitled The Wreck of HMS Speedy, The Tragedy That Shook Upper Canada. Dan is a founder of the annual Brighton History Week. Since 2000, he's done community genealogy research and provides the details at treesbydan.com. He has a database of well over 100,000 individuals radiating out from his own families, which settled in the north end of Brighton Township. Well, that's quite a resume, Dan. Maybe we could start, perhaps, by getting you to tell us a bit about your new book, The HMS Speedy. The wreck of the HMS Speedy is a well-known story locally. Why did you decide to research and write about this topic particularly?
Yes, the story of the Speedy is local lore around Brighton. I grew up with it. This book came about for a very particular reason. Fall of 2018, I came into possession of a box of documents. They were the papers of Ed Burt, the professional diver of Belleville, who did the exploration out in the lake in the early 1990s. Unfortunately, Ed passed away in fall of 2017, and his family gave me his documents with the idea that the story might be revealed in sort of a reasonable sense. I'd worked with Ed before that. So that was kind of the choice made for me. My third book was going to be about the Speedy. The story's been written up so many times over the years, I counted well over 45, but mostly as a newspaper article or a magazine article on a small scale. So it was a book in 1992, Speedy Justice, which was taking the legal standpoint. But I wanted to do it in the way I've learned how to do a history story, and that is based on the original documents, the documents from the time. Once I got researching, it just became such an interesting story because there's lots of documents about that time period. And it's a time period we don't know much about. 1804, it's that period in between the War of Independence when the UALs came and then the War of 1812. So look at our history, we think nothing happened in that period, but that's not true. It's a fascinating developmental period.
Half the fun must have been setting it against the backdrop of that time period as well.
The focus is around York, of course, which is now Toronto. And in 1804, it was only a decade old. They were just beginning to set up the basic infrastructure for government. There was probably 450 people lived in York at that time. So a small place. You know, everybody would know everybody else. And when you read up the history in the various documents we have, you hear the same names come up pretty routinely. It was interesting to see the context of 1804 in the sense of the indigenous history as well. Understanding the conflicts that were happening at that time. The settlers had really just started to come in the previous decade, and it set along the north a couple of concessions. Above the north, the first couple of concessions, the surveying hadn't even been done. It was still kind of the wilderness at that time, where fur trading went along.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on some of the sources that you went after to get this information?
The biggest source was the British military records. These are on a website on the Library and Archives Canada website. That's a tremendous resource. It was one of those that I wasted a lot of time there because you just got to look at the next page, you know. But I found hundreds of documents there that related to the Speedy. This was the records of the Provincial Marine. This was the letters going back between Kingston and York about the repair and the building of ships, the disciplining of soldiers, the ship captains coming in and going, storms that damaged ships and how they needed to repair, that kind of day in and day out activity. You know, I wanted to understand that from the standpoint of being able to understand what the Speedy was and the context it was in that led up to its demise, basically. And it also helps with the people, understanding who the people were that we were dealing with. And the politics of the time are very well documented. And that lends very much into why the Speedy sailed to begin with. So that was important to find out. In terms of York, the town of York, early history of the town of York, you've got to look at the landmarks of Toronto. It's a huge set of documents that have references to original newspaper reports from the time. And that is all now in digital form, so you can cross-reference and search, and it's a tremendous resource. There's many others, but those are the two main ones.
I can hear the excitement in your voice when you're talking about it. I know it is one when you're researching something like this. One thing leads to the next, and before you know it, you're off on a tangent somewhere. It's about time now. I can ask you to read to us from the wreck of HMS Speedy.
The first reading is from Chapter 8, called The Ship and the Captain, page 70. This is about a week before the Speedy sails. Lieutenant Governor Hunter and his military secretary, James Green, are stepping outside Parliament House, which is at the east end of the shoreline of York, and they're looking down the shore to see what ship is there at the garrison, which is like Fort York today. So here we go. Hunter and Green gazed down the shoreline and took notice of a ship being tied up at the small wharf at the garrison. Looking more closely with his spyglass, Hunter confirmed it was HMS Speedy, one of His Majesty's armed vessels on Lake Ontario. The flurry of preparations going on around York regarding the trial of Aghatanikut had, by this time, focused on the very practical issue of transportation. The fall diseases were scheduled to begin at Newcastle on October 10th, so the contingent of officials, assistants, witnesses, plus the constables, and of course the accused, must leave York no later than the 7th. During the last week of September, several of the ships that were active on the lake at this time came and went according to their normal habits. Now, only a week before the planned departure for Newcastle, it was time to select a ship for this special duty. Setting down his spyglass, Hunter shook his head in a gesture that said, "Oh, dear." The two men looked at each other and grimaced. HMS Speedy was one of several British gunboats that plied the Great Lakes at this time. They were built and managed by the Provincial Marine, the organization that represented the British Navy and the British North American colonies. Many of the ship captains and sailors in those ships came out of the British Navy by one path or another, but the organization was commanded by the British Army, which was headquartered in Quebec City. Hunter knew HMS Speedy as the vessel that had delivered him to York in August of 1799 amid ceremony and celebration. It was a typical workhorse of the Provincial Marine. Government officials and military officers traveled between Kingston and York on these ships. And at the same time, decks were piled high with all kinds of cargo. Launched at Kingston in the fall of 1798, at the same time as the identical HMS Swift, the Speedy was a modest gunboat, about 55 feet long, with twin masts. Hunter recalled that the launch of both ships had been delayed several months in order to build an extra 2 feet of height on the sides of the deck. The demand for shipping space was growing every year, and this modification was done to increase the tonnage carried by each ship. Unfortunately, it would also make them difficult to sail in rough water. As he squinted again through the spyglass, Hunter had the unsettling feeling that both he and HMS Speedy were a bit worse for wear. His gout was a persistent annoyance, and the long-standing stomach ailments he had picked up in the tropics made him crankier than normal. The ship was at the end of a stormy sailing season and had a sad, ragged appearance. What Hunter remembered about his trips in this conveyance was the discomfort of traveling with meager passenger comforts. The Toronto yacht, which he much preferred for his trips across the lake, had a private cabin that he appreciated. Knowing the history of HMS Speedy, neither Hunter nor Green would have willingly chosen it for the Newcastle trip. In the fall of 1804, it was 6 years old and nearing the end of its useful life. Its construction had followed the common practice of the Provincial Marine at the time, using timber that was uncured or green. This resulted in high maintenance and a short lifespan. In 1795, the Duke of La Roche-Bochard had noted, "All these vessels are built of timber fresh cut down and not seasoned, and for this reason, last never longer than 6 or 8 years. To preserve them, even to this time, requires a thorough repair. Nothing much had changed in a decade. In fact, the British military naval records held in the collection of the Library and Archives Canada show there were plans afoot to repair the Speedy that fall in the hope that it might gain one more shipping season before it would have to be replaced. This kind of major refit was repeated every winter for these ships in order to make sure they would be ready for the next sailing season. Normally, the cargo carried by a Speedy and other vessels of the Provincial Marine were very mundane. On April 17th, 1804, Lieutenant Earle wrote from Kingston that, "I intend to load the Speedy this week with peas to go on to Amherstburg." A request came from Kingston on August 13th, 1801, asked to forward 50 bushels of Indian corn for the use of His Majesty's service. "I have ordered Lieutenant Paxton to take them on board the Speedy." A year later, the cargo may have been somewhat more anticipated, when the Speedy, after receiving some repairs, is now receiving a cargo of port on board for the upper country.
Thanks so much, Dan. And now we'll take a short break.